Thank you so much for joining us. You have many, many options you could find on radio, podcast, television, and whatever. We truly appreciate you choosing the team here to guide you through the sports morning. Greg Papa will join us momentarily. Want to remind you, the KHK Street Team, Friday, 7:30 to 8:30, will be at Streets Pub and Grub, 1804 J Street, in the brand-new, revitalized downtown Sacramento. Stop by to get the full list of this week's names you'll need to win the Kings Row tickets. Woo-hoo! We're giving away for opening night. In fact, Wheel of Kings coming up in just about a half an hour, so write down that next one. For more info, visit the contest page at khtk.com. So before we get to Greg Papa and your Oakland Raiders, I think what we pulled, just to put a cherry on top of last segment Sunday when we were talking about the Kings, and this is not to be homery at all, although I am guilty of it at times, I do think this is grounded in logic. Katie, when the starters were playing the starters last night in the first half, the Kings held the Lakers to 39 points, which, if you extrapolate that out, is 78 points for the game, and they had, what, a 12-point lead, mm-hmm. I believe, at the half? Then Dave Joerger did what a good coach should do that has the bulk of his roster brand new, and of those brand new players, many of them rookies, he started with matchups, different guys on the floor with different mm-hmm. other guys. That's what you use the preseason for. I'd much rather go defeated instead, the opposite of undefeated. I'd rather go 0-for in the preseason.
Defeated.
It's important to have a little bit of momentum. I get that. But I personally would
That's
rather.
That's why you use the final preseason right. game as kind of your blueprint.
Use this as your checkerboard, mm-hmm. though. Use this as, I'd rather that happen than have us go, 4-1, 5-1, and you play the starters 36 minutes a game. Well, okay.
You want to be able to start them, play them together, play them a little bit of time. They played about 15, 16 minutes just so that they can develop some kind of a rapport and a flow with each other. Yes. However, the rest of the time, you really want to use it as an opportunity to get a look at other guys and how they might fit in different pairings together on the floor, but also in terms of what they can contribute. And they do have a lot of young guys that they've got to get them court time. However, you also have to think about the Lakers aren't expected to be a good team this year. So just don't read into this. Look at it for what it is. It's basically another practice game.
2 hours in the books, 1 hour to go. If you missed the previous part of the program, here's what you didn't hear. Kings lose again, start 0-1. Now we have no shot at the preseason championship game.
Damn. There's something that's humorous about a competent two-guard fitting in seamlessly.
Right?
What?
What is that? I only pull out for big games, but I'm not blowing the whole wad tonight. I do have the secret sauce.
Can we isolate all of that?
Unfortunate choice of words.
Hold on nice. A second. Did Grant step on the G-man on that call? Let's go instant replay, see if we throw the penalty flag on Grant.
Richardson now goes to post-up mode, digs back on Jacobs, spins inside.
Nice. And
I'll tell you why I give him the pass.
Okay.
Because that was all he said.
Jason Jones, Jason of the Sacramento Beat.
I'll keep going to the gym, you know, and pass on my Roscoe's trip in SoCal, but, you know, not get as much and keep it up.
Talk about what happened there in that game defensively.
You could see the emphasis on calling out stuff, being more vocal, being active. You just had a bunch of guys out there at the end of the game who really didn't know what they were doing. And it's no knock on them. I mean, you know, Scal, you know, Papianis, Malachi, those guys don't know what they're doing. And they're going to get better.
All that plus this hour coming up at KHTK.com shortly after the program ends in podcast form. I appreciate and admire people that are very good at their craft. And our next guest, the voice of the Raiders, and he does so much more, Greg Papa, who, by the way, of course, brought to you by Jiffy Lube, JiffyLubeCA.com for big, powerful, valuable coupons in the area over 30 years. Check them out at JiffyLubeCA.com. The thing about Greg is, again, he's forgotten more about football than most people have ever learned. So I will start out by welcoming him in with this stat, Greg, that in Raider history, they have started out 3-0 on the road 5 times, and including this year. The previous 4 times they started out 3-0 on the road, they went to the AFC Championship game and lost. So can we just book the ticket now?
Well, but we don't want to lose.
No, I don't.
Pittsburgh or New England.
Sure.
So I know the last time was 2000, and we lost the home game to Baltimore. Were there three other times in the 70s?
I have no idea. I just
did all that research, and you don't have a nugget like that?
Welcome to our show, Greg.
That's as far as it goes with me, Greg.
The problem was the Raiders went to the AFC Championship game every damn year, and they kept losing. I mean, that was a torment of Al Davis's life, was he just – could not get over that title game. You know, mainly it was Pittsburgh, but earlier it was Baltimore. They had an AFL championship game. The final game in the American Football League history was that game at home against Kansas City, and Otis Taylor caught a ball way out of bounds that would have been overturned by replay today, but back in 69 they didn't have replay, and the Raiders lost that one, you know, 17-7. Kansas City went on and won Super Bowl IV. They lost the AFL title game the year before to John Willie Namath, and Namath went the next week and beat the Baltimore Colts in Super Bowl III, one of the biggest games in the league history. So John Madden couldn't win that game except one time. Kenny Stabler couldn't win that game except one time. That's why it took him forever and for Snake after he was gone to get into Canton. So the plague of this franchise has been that AFL AFC championship game. This has not been able to win it, but if you told me right now we could go to the AFC championship game and lose, that'd be fun.
Yeah.
It's where they've been, but you don't want to lose it. But that's something to keep an eye on. That's something to keep an eye on.
Well, and Greg, there's no denying the fact that Reggie McKenzie has really accumulated some great young players, brought in some veterans to put around, especially with what Crabtree did on Sunday. But I think one of the people, the rookies this year that people are excited about was Carl Joseph, and we've got to see him now for two straight games as a starter. And there was a new little wrinkle in this last game on Sunday. They're starting to use him more as a pass rusher from that safety position. What did you like there?
Well, they blitzed him. He's good. And they did blitz him a couple times the first game in Nashville. He's a guy that, when I watched him on tape in college, he was a fabulous player. I was really excited. I got a tip the Raiders are going to draft him that day, so I studied him, and I just loved him. He was just a ferocious headhunter. He would come from across the entire field and take your head off, strong and tough. He played the ball. He was just, you know, better than all those kids. And then when I first saw him in training camp, he just looked so little. You didn't realize he was that small on tape. I mean, he's like 5. They list him at 5, whatever they list him at, 5'10". He's shorter than me, and I'm like 5'9 and a quarter. He's 5'8", but he's thick. But the point is, as far as the blitzing, he's not a guy that you can just stick in the box close to the line of scrimmage and have him play the run, because these 330-pound men are going to get to him and lean on him. Mm-hmm. So you got to start him from what we call in the NFL football's depth, meaning back off the line, then you bring him down, and then he comes screaming at you with a head of steam. Now he's tough to deal with, and the Raiders have done a good job of that. They're mixing their safeties where, you know, one safety, Reggie Nelson's not there by himself. Remember you asking me before the season started, how are they going to use Reggie Nelson? And we didn't know because Reggie hadn't played. But they're using him now the way the Bengals used him. Reggie was not a guy that just sat in the middle of the field like Earl Thomas does in Seattle, and he takes the whole 53 and a third width of the field. He's a guy you put on one hash, the other safety's on the other hash because Reggie's older now, and they don't have to go laterally as far. And then with Carl, you'll see 42 start to come down right before the ball is snapped. When you watch Raiders on defense and TV likes to go tight and show you the line of scrimmage, and you don't see the safeties. So keep an eye on where they're coming from as far as the back of the Raider defense. And watch Carl Joseph. He will often come down, and he can come so fast from far away because he's fast, and also he's little. So use that to an advantage where they can't quite see him. So if he's coming once the play starts, they may lose him, and he may be able to get in there, and he's tough. If he's coming with speed, he will get you on the ground. So they did blitz him. They actually blitzed him in Nashville. Remember the play when Marcus Mariota fumbled? That was a Joseph mm-hmm. blitz. He missed him. He kind of ran around him. He came from a kind of a swiping angle from the side, and he missed him. But he flushed him out, and then he chased him from the back. He did not give up on the play, and he was providing heat. When Mariota had the ball knocked away by Bruce Irvin, Carl was climbing up his back. So he's a tough guy. He will show up in the run game. He's the kind of guy, though, you have to start behind the line and then bring him forward, and also sometimes just leave him back and let him cover. But he's a good tackler. He's playing well. But to me, the biggest transformation in this defense is starting Corey James at middle linebacker. And I remember telling you back in training camp, you know, I like this guy. He's got to play more than Ben Heaney's better. But I didn't think he would take to it this fast. The first game in Nashville, they got him off the field in the nickel. They played him only in the base. But this last game, he didn't come off the field. And he made 15 tackles. 15! 12 unassisted, 3 he helped out a teammate or vice versa. That's a lot of tackles. And he's a good tackler. So inserting those two rookies, one's a round one pick, your 14th overall. The other guy's a sixth-round draft pick. When you pick a guy in the sixth round at linebacker, you're thinking he's going to contribute on special teams. Maybe he'll be able to mix in a couple of years. You don't expect that he's going to start in his third and fourth games in the NFL, and in his fourth game have 15 tackles. So Carl's playing really well, but Corey James has really helped to solidify the Raider middle of their defense, which was getting picked on the first 2 weeks of the year.
Yeah, I mean, that was a thin spot going into the season, Greg, and now, you know, you're running into depth issues there as well. And you brought up that nickel package. I'm kind of curious, in the AFC West, when you've got a West Coast team like Kansas City and you got Phillip Rivers who's going to sling it all over the yard, other than Denver, it's a pretty pass-happy type of division. Are we going to see more of that nickel package now that the linebacker depth isn't what it was?
Yeah, they play DJ Hayden a lot. They're in the nickel quite a bit. NFL teams last year, I think, were in their nickel. Nickel is when you play a third defensive back versus a third wide receiver, and the Raiders' nickel is DJ Hayden. So when DJ's on the field, they're going to be in their nickel. There's also a defense they play called a penny defense where they have still four defensive backs, but just one's a safety, Reggie Nelson, and they play three corners. And then they still stay with their heavy package to stop the run, because what teams do is they get you in the nickel. When you're in your nickel, that's more of your pass coverage lineup, then they run on you. So they're trying to get you into a certain defense. So, yeah, as I say, last year in the NFL, teams played their nickel. The only time you really play your base, and it's even not necessarily then, because you match up. Most of the time, teams play only their base in first and 10. And then out of that, you evolve. You know, if it's second and 7, you may stay in your base. If it's, you know, second and 17, you're going to get in your nickel. If it's third and 7, your nickel. And the beauty of football, and it's one element I wish TV would cover better, John Gruden starts to get into it when he talks about personnel groups, because the defense will match, the defensive personnel group will come in to match what the offense's personnel group is. And they have coaches in the press box with binoculars that just watch. The way to look at pro football, it's a lot like basketball. It's why it's fascinating to me. You have 11 guys on offense, right? So 5 are offensive linemen, and pretty much they're stationary objects. They don't move. Now, occasionally, the other day in Baltimore, they move the right tackle out like a wide receiver and the left tackle, and they kind of play with it with a bunch. So occasionally they'll try to screw with you. But basically, you've got 5 stationary linemen, left tackle, left guard, center, right guard, right tackle. And then the quarterback is also stationary. He's the 6th guy. He's always there. Now, that's why the read option works so well, because he can become a player in the run game if you have a quarterback that can run and you run that offense. But let's just say you have, you know, 5 stationary guys, the big linemen, and the quarterback is 6. Then what personnel offensively do you use? Do you use 2 running backs and 1 tight end? That's known as 21 personnel. Then do the math. You have 5 eligibles left. 2 and 1 is 3. That means you have 2 wide receivers on the field. Do you do, the Raiders have been using a package what's known as 10 personnel. You count the running back first, the tight end second. So 10 is 1 running back, no tight ends. So how many wide receivers are left? 4. That's an unusual offensive personnel package. The Raiders started playing with that. That forces the opponents to get their dime back on the field, the nickel and the dime. So I'm giving you kind of a lecture on this, but it's just kind of, it's that is the fascinating element of the matchup game between defense and offense. And that's kind of the reason the Raiders were slow to get their defensive play calls in, is they were waiting for the offense to sub, and the coach upstairs would tell Ken Norton, 11 personnel. That means 1 back, 1 tight end, 3 wide receivers. Then you go to your nickel. If, you know, 22 personnel, 2 backs, 2 tight ends, big guys, then you got just 1 wide receiver on the field and you match up with a heavy package. So you match up with what the offense does personnel groups, but I think the Raiders have gotten away from that a little bit, and they're playing down and distance now. We don't care what personnel group you're in, because you could take those tight ends and make them wide receivers. You just call an audible at the line, they all go flexed out, and now we're not, you know, we got a defensive end over a tight end. That's not a good matchup. So you're just more playing it on, it's third and eight, we're going to play our defense and just think you're going to pass, and if you run it, we got to rally up and tackle. So that is the real chess match of football that people don't really understand, but it's a simple concept when you look at it, and it's the first thing I look at every single play. What offensive package is on the field, and then how does the defense matching up? Are they going to a nickel, a dime? Are they staying in their base? It's really the game within the game of football.
Yeah, I mean, just to be clear, as Greg Papa joins us on KHTK, the other part of it is, too, if you are just playing down in distance, as you said that they've been playing recently, I mean, they've got all kinds of tendencies on that, so they have a pretty good idea of what personnel they'll face, right?
Yeah, but they'll try to get you, and they got tendencies on your defense. Now, the big adjustment, I think, from the Raiders proceeding forward is Corey James is not a great cover guy, and they're going to pick on him. So they got away with playing him almost every snap defensively. I don't know if he came off the field at all last game in Baltimore, but other teams will see him and say, well, if they're going to leave 57 on the field all plays, then we're going to attack him. We're going to make him cover. We're going to bring a running back on a circle route into his area, give him a little stutter, and that's the one area of his game. He plays fast coming to tackle guys, but he's not necessarily an agile athlete where he can move side to side, and if he gets matched up, like if he ever got matched up on one of the two Raider small running backs, Jalen Richard or DeAndre Washington, he'd get cooked. He could not cover that kind of guy, and other teams have players, you know, like him. You know, San Diego's without Danny Woodhead, he got hurt playing the Chargers on Sunday, but Dexter McCluster can do that. They can line him up in the backfield and kind of screw with you. So, yeah, you know their tendencies, but they know your tendencies. And then the beautiful part of football is they will break their tendencies. That's why I think it's like Sean Smith sometimes, he studies so much film and video, and he's kind of, what I call it is, and Carson Palmer had this problem when he was the Raider quarterback, you're playing the game on Wednesday where you're looking at all their video from their previous games, and you're sitting there late at night on a Wednesday, and you say, oh, I when they do this, they're going to do that. I'll be ready for it. Well, they know that you've seen when they do this, they're going to do that. So you know what? They're going to do this and not do that. They're going to do this. And you have to play the game. It's going to move. It's a fluid game, and they're going to screw with you. So they purposely set you up. So you have to study tendencies and have an idea, but you got to be careful that they're not just showing you that because they know you watch the video, and now they're going to trap you. So that's the fascinating game. You want to be prepared and overly prepared, but then you want to be fluid where, you know, not necessarily is he going to run that. They show that route, you know, they're going to run these routes when these guys line up this way, but they may not do that this time. So just be ready in case they don't do it.
Greg Papa joining us on KHTK. Thanks, as always, to Jiffy Lube for making that possible. Got to ask you, Greg, before our time is up, I gave my guarantee earlier today as a diehard Giants fan. I'm guaranteeing it. The even streak stops tonight. You can't beat Thor at home. Oh. Madison Bumgarner gets – they've used him too much. You know, I got all my lucky jerseys out and everything. I don't want to tempt fate. But how do you see the game?
Why are you bailing now, Dave?
I'm not. No, Greg, this is his method. It's like the reverse jinx.
Either way, he wins. If they lose, I told you so. We're going on to Chicago. Is that it?
Yeah, no, you can't do that. You can't do that the next day. That's dirty pool. But honestly, tonight, it's Bumgarner and pray for a rain delay, really, here. How do you match it?
I think they're good. They're going to have the one thing I think proceeding forward is how they use Jeff Samardzija.
Yep.
Ty Block was so good Saturday against Clayton Kershaw. I want that guy pitching against the Cubs. And, that you know, he would pitch in a game four. So and Samardzija, they just came out with a playoff roster before I jumped on with you. Samardzija and Cueto are both in play tonight. So if Mad Bum is just not good early, and he's given up home runs. You know, he's not been as locked in as you think. And I worry about Cespedes and Yoenis is so far off the plate, it's hard to get in on him. But anyway, if Bum struggles, and he might, you know, he's a human being, then I think they go to Cueto early. There's also a theory where I'd love to see him just throw Samardzija in the bullpen and use like Randy Johnson in 95 where he just blows hard. He can pitch every playoff game. and let him go in the sixth, seventh, whenever the starter's got to come out.
Just has experience there, too, Greg, too. That's how he started.
What he did in Chicago. He hasn't done it in a while, so it's a little bit of a risk to do that in the playoffs, but I think Samardzija would be great at it, and I want Ty Block to face the Cubs. Now, that's getting ahead of itself.
Sure.
Tonight, I'll just tell you this. I've been watching Noah Syndergaard for like 48 straight hours. He's the hardest throwing pitcher maybe I've ever seen. I mean, J.R. Richard threw really hard. Nolan Ryan threw really hard. But I don't know if this guy will throw average 98. I think he'll be so amped up tonight. He'll hit 99, 100, 101. That's his four-seam fastball. His two-seam fastball is just, it's as fast. It's not any different. The four-seamer, it's the way you grip it, and the two-seamer sinks. So the two-seamer for most guys is 3 or 4 miles per hour slower than the four-seamer. His is not. He will hit 98 with a four-seamer, come right back with a 97 two-seamer that's moving crazy. His slider is 90. It averages 92. Yeah. I've seen some 94. So his slider tonight will be faster, harder than Bumgarner's fastball. But you know what? I always say about basketball players, everybody gets enamored about great plays. That doesn't make him a great player. And this guy is a hard, hard thrower. I'm trying to figure out if he's a great pitcher. He might be. He just might be. He might be tonight, but I think he doesn't quite have the nuances of changing speeds and setting you up like the other long-haired guy, Jacob DeGrom, who I think is a great pitcher. That guy is a tremendous pitcher. If they were going against him, I'd be a little more concerned. Syndergaard, now, all that being said, he could shove the night, two-hit shutout, you don't touch him. He could punch out 14, and he's just too fast, and you can't get to him. But the Giants have always been a good fastball-hitting team. The numbers show they're not quite as good this year. I think they'll be fine. I think they're going to hit this guy. I do. I just don't think he's quite refined enough. He has enough wrinkles. So he's the hardest thrower, certainly, in the game today. He's like a reliever. He's like a short guy. He's going to come in like Goose Gossage. But I just don't know if he's a great pitcher yet. He may get there in time. It'll throw his change up a little bit in his curveball. But mainly he's going to come at you hard. And I just don't think hard always impresses the Giants, and I think they'll find a way to hit this guy tonight.
Greg Papa, courtesy of Jiffy Lube, joins us every week. This has got to have been as fun a year for you as you've had in a while, calling those Raider games, and we've been enjoying the hell out of it on our ends.
Yeah, two in a row at home.
Yes, sir.
I issued a proclamation or a request for the team the other day. No more losses at home.
No.
Could they win all? If they go on the road and win three, you go to Baltimore, that's really impressive. They should not allow teams to come into Oakland anymore and beat them. And last year they were 3-5 under Jack. They were a 500 road team, and they lost to Atlanta. Atlanta's pretty good. We're going to see how good Atlanta is. They got Denver and Seattle the next two games. But in the game against Denver, that's the one you got to circle, right? November the 6th, that Sunday nighter against the Broncos, that's going to be huge. That could be a tough one. But any other game, they should not allow teams to come into the black hole and beat them anymore. They're that good of a team. They're starting to be like the Warriors, where they're just one day, they're going to take this league over. It may not be today, but tomorrow's coming fast. And I think they have to get the mentality that no more. No more do teams come into the black hole and beat them. That is not going to happen anymore.
We will talk to you 1 week from today, hopefully with another win in the belt. Thanks,
Greg.
All right,
guys, have fun.
Take care. That's Greg Papa. We're late for a break, but it was worth it. We'll come back. Wheel of Kings. Wheel of Kings. Get the pen and paper out or whatever. Get your phone out. Whatever you do to take notes, as we'll give you the next king. You could win Kings Row seats to opening night. We take the break on The Drive, Sports 1140 KHDK.
G-Man on the call. Kings basketball is back. Preseason style anyway. They would go on to lose 103-84, but they sat their starters for the second half, and that was pretty much the story there. With updates every 30 minutes and breaking news first, I'm Nate Goodyear on your home for the best live and local coverage of the National Football League, Sports 1140 KHTK.
Hey, you know something before we get to Wheel of Kings? And it is Wheel of Kings time, right, Matt? We got Wheel of Kings coming up here. Nate, during his update, said the Kings take on the Lakers in Anaheim, and all of a sudden, I had like a quick hair go up on the back of my neck. Because not that long ago, and I say this fresh from the Golden One Center last night at their debut show with Paul McCartney, not long ago, that was a very real possibility that the Kings would be taking on the Lakers from Anaheim.
In a regular season.
Yeah.
In a regular season game.
At home.
As a home game. And then that's all out the window. I'll say this. We touched on it at the beginning of the show, and I just want to say it because we have the most people listening right now. Paul McCartney is playing again tonight. I was lucky enough to be there last night. I was – my seats were – you know, they weren't – I didn't care. I was just in the building. You know, I was top of the lower bowl, a bit stretched away. There's not a bad sight line in there. I got up, walked around a bit. I went with my dad. First off, Paul McCartney's a cyborg. 3 hours straight. The first break he took was his encore, which was Hey Jude, and then he came back to Yesterday. You know, when you can go to an encore with Hey Jude and come back to Yesterday, that's pretty good.
Do you think it's a bad thing for you to be telling people what the...
Yeah, the set lists were put out by Golden One Center. I mean, the set lists are there.
Not everybody saw them on Twitter.
Did you confirm that it was Paul McCartney and not a younger man in a Paul McCartney mask?
Exactly. It's a Paul McCartney cyborg is what my point is. He's 74 years old, I think, and did not take a break. Get your parking early. I said this yesterday, but I experienced it myself last night. My little plan I had didn't work out. They shut down a lot of the stuff around there. So you can go to it's sacpark.org. I know is one of the spots. There's apps also on your phone. Just put in Sacramento parking. You'll find it. Reserve your parking spot. Pay for it online in advance. You just scan your phone when you go into the parking place. It goes boop and boom. There you have a parking spot. The only way you're going to have a bad experience is if you don't do a little preparation. But my God, that was amazing. Matt George, you ready? Let's do this. Wheel of Kings time. Okay, welcome in. Wheel of Kings time. By the way, somebody just texted me saying, how was traffic getting out of Golden One Center? It was great. It really was really good. We walked a couple blocks to our car, went down whatever it is, J Street to the on-ramp, and
nice.
We were off. That's it. Much better than I thought. Today's former Sacramento Kings player that you will need in order to win. That's coming up in 2 seconds, but I want to remind you, make sure you go and check out your local Coors Light stands all around the region. You can go to KHDK.com and find out exactly where those are, and you're going to get a free name just by going there.
Nice.
Yeah. A free name?
Free name, baby.
I already have one, Dave.
What's that? Nathan?
And it came free, too. Mm-hmm.
Don't forget, collect all 15 of these, and we'll tell you in a second. Nate, you know, Katie's been spinning the wheel.
No, it's Nate's turn today.
Nate's wheel. Do you mind?
I'll do it. I'm coming
right
down. Here we go.
We've said earlier, the Wheel of Kings last week, 20 by 20. We actually weighed it since Monday to now.
7 by 7. Quit making it bigger than it is. Okay. That's such a guy thing to do.
I go with 20 because that's how high my vertical is. I get up there and pull that thing down.
But the wheel made out of solid aluminum. 220 pounds. Nate, you ready? Spin that wheel. Boom. Wow.
Did my Michael Phelps warm up?
Yeah, that was a 20-foot vertical for sure.
Getting up there.
Oh, Thel Wilson. Nope's not him. Joe
You're
Klein,
silly.
Not him either.
Oh.
So
nice.
Who the heck is Chris Dougie?
Chris Dudley?
It's Doug Christie, everybody.
Yes. The latest victim to my fantasy genius.
Doug Christie, and you guys know this, you were witnesses, the biggest grapes I've ever seen in my life. The ones he brought to the
fantasy. But his wife doesn't weigh them.
No, she doesn't. The ones he brought to the fantasy football draft were like grapes on steroids. They're the biggest green grapes I'd ever seen in my life, and he's our king of the week, Nate. Your thoughts?
He's the king of our hearts, too, Dave.
Don't forget to collect all 15. What are we on now? 12, 8, 6?
I think 6? We're on 8.
Okay. Don't forget, someone's going to disagree with you on the text message.
That's
in 3, 2, 1.
They could be right or wrong. I don't know.
Get all 15 former Kings players and bring the names to Malt and Mash, 715 K Street, Tuesday, October 18th from 5 to 7. Enter to win a pair of tickets. Kings Row, opening night.
And I keep saying how, you know, no, the Kings Row, they don't have the cup holders because, you know, they're in the really, really nice seats.
That thing needs to go away.
No, but that's...
Just drink your beer, for crying out loud.
That's what my job is, actually, on opening night, is the winner of these tickets. I will sit there and stand there, and I'm going to hold their cup for
them.
Wow. Yeah.
Katie Christensen, your cup holder, everybody.
Yep.
Somebody tried the hashtag last night on Twitter. Like, here we cup holder. No! God.
Is it so hard? Hey. Is it so difficult to ask people to just not put down their beer? Just drink your beer.
You don't understand
but
that.
They want it, but their counter would be that they can't cheer, they can't clap their hands when they're drinking a beer. Now, granted, most people drinking beer at the game are cheering with their mouths and yelling and screaming, but Dude, I sat in those seats last night. I completely get it. I understand why. There's leg room. And I'm not trying to poo-poo those who want. Cup holders are great. That's fine. That's Dan. You know what? I'd rather have leg room. You know, I'd rather have arm. I'd rather have that. It's not like
all of those seats are extremely spacious,
yes,
by the way.
And cushioned.
Yes.
But it's just the prevailing.
I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. The prevailing idea that the designers of this arena like tripped, fell down into a puddle and forgot about cup holders. Like it wasn't like completely thought out.
Dave, Nate needs to get something off his
chest. No, well, now you've set me up way too big. But like the cup holders at Sleep Train Arena didn't work.
They didn't.
So, no. I mean, we don't even know what we're complaining about. They were on the back of the seat. If your beer was full, you couldn't put it in there. It would spill all over the place. And you'd have people's hair dipping into your...
Yes.
They didn't even work. So you ended up setting your beer on the floor all the time anyway, or at least this guy did. So... I don't know. Is that big of a deal?
Here's the thing. There are some people that by default, and I don't know if this is a fault in them or not, but it's just human nature. There are some people in this world, and I happen to be birthed by one of them.
Is it your mom?
That I'm not calling any of my parents out by name, especially my mother. But there are just some people that they do not feel like they are doing their proper function in life if there is not something wrong with anything. You could cure world hunger, and they'd complain because
it took so long,
and no more Sarah McLachlan commercials on TV.
I mean,
there's something wrong.
That's the
I got to jump in front of that a little bit because you know I'm generally that guy, but I had it explained to me before I could even notice that there were no cup holders. Like, hey, this is a very logical thing. We wanted more space. We get more people in there, whatever. Because yeah, I mean, my first reaction would have been the same. How many hundreds of millions of dollars, and you didn't do cup holders? But come on. They did think it through. I'm happy to know that. So
it's
not
like there's
whining.
No cup holders in the entire arena.
Yeah, true.
The whole lower bowl has cup holders. The cheapest seats and the most expensive seats do not have cup holders.
Yeah, because the most expensive seats are the leather ones that they bring out.
Bring back the middle class. They get cup holders.
Jeez. I mean, the rich people don't have cup holders.
Nate, look at him. He's really pleased with himself. Yeah.
From the 916. And by the way, most of these texts are actually on the same page here. But no cup holders. It's ridiculous. It's simply expectation. No. Come on. Here's another one. Come on, guys. You know the cup holders aren't there because it cut down on costs.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, please. The cup holders are like one of those little window panels on the outside. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. And the drive will finish this up. Sports 1140 KHTK. Monster Energy's Aftershock Music Festival almost upon us. October 22nd and 23rd. Discovery Park, Tool Slayer, Avenged Sevenfold, Korn, Primus, Disturbed, and more. Tickets going fast. Some left on sale, though. Grab them now, AftershockConcert.com. We had some fun yesterday with Ben Affleck, and we got a lot of response there. Somebody followed up. We played a clip of him finding out the Patriots were losing. Apparently, he was doing an on-set interview with Sports Illustrated, as we heard the lady talk about in the background. So good job clearing that up there, emailers and texters. Josh Norman is looking at what the Panthers have or haven't been doing, and he basically is taunting them a little bit by saying, you get what you pay for. That's exactly what he said. Sounded like I was interviewing him with that cackle, but apparently that was somewhere else. I don't know if you guys caught Arnold Palmer's funeral at all yesterday. I caught about 20 minutes of it.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, golf royalty and then some. We have a lot of audio from there. I'll just play you part of what Jack Nicklaus said, which I did catch in his entirety, and it was absolutely perfect, as you would expect from the Golden Bear. Jack Nicklaus, not a dry eye in the house, and they were panning out. You could see Bubba Watson openly crying, a number of other golfers and family members. You know, I did not get teary. I watched the whole thing, and there was plenty of options to get teary. I did not get any tears until that actual part right there when Jack started to lose it, because Jack's a very stoic type of dude, and when he started it, you know, I didn't cry, but I definitely welled up a little bit. You could just sense the love for Arnold Palmer.
It's okay.
You can cry. Listen, I made
it's not your fault,
hey,
Dave.
It just means that you have emotions.
Yeah, and
hey,
you feel them.
It's not your fault.
You guys forget I made a movie in which I pretty much cried for 90 out of the 110 minutes of the entire stupid thing. I mean, it's not like, you know, nobody's ever seen me bawl before. So let's see.
If you're not stuffing your mouth with popcorn and brownies, you're crying.
You're damn right. Damian Lillard had an opinion on Kevin Durant, maybe not Kevin Durant specifically, but when asked if he'd ever maybe join a super team.
He also likes having that extended vacation every year because this is where the NBA is headed, man. And, you know, hey, that's cute that he wants to feel that way, but, like, maybe you stay silent for another 6 or 7 years until either, A, you end up joining a super team yourself, or, B, you end up creating one.
I'm going to tell you something. I believe the opposite of what you just said. The NBA is in no way, shape, or form headed there. The NBA is enjoying a loophole right now, a temporary loophole in which this is allowed. Do not think for a second in the next collective bargaining agreement, if anything like this continues, and it's probably going to happen anyways, that Larry Bird rights, you want to talk about Larry Bird rights right now where the home team has more of an opportunity and ability to sign these players, watch them double those Larry Bird rights or whatever they need to do to find the balance where you can go sign and make a super team, that's fine, or go sign with another team, but you're going to make not just a decent amount less. You're going to end up making like 30-40% less. I'll bet you dollars to donuts.
That's fine. They're going to try to legislate it out.
However,
if Damian Lillard wants to win a title, he's either going to have to join one or create one.
Do you think the NBA would allow that?
How
long term?
Well, I mean, the Warriors are there.
They are there. I completely agree with you, but talk about something horrific for the – but maybe not. Maybe it's not horrific. Maybe people want to see dynasties. That's been proven before.
How much does I don't know, how much does the Warriors' performance in the playoffs this year have a bearing on that? I mean, if they roll through the regular season and lose 4 games and stomp everyone in the playoffs, I think you'll hear that a lot louder. But, you know, what happens if they do lose to Cleveland again in 7 games or whatever? They blew a 3-1 lead in the finals.
Did they?
I mean, if that happens, I think then those voices aren't as loud.
However, I think that your thing with the they're going to make less money, the CBA is going to write it in, so on and so forth.
Write it in more.
Yeah, you're taking out the fact that guys that are those players that will go and build super teams, Kevin Durant, LeBron James, those guys of the NBA, they're making far more money off of endorsements than they are their NBA salaries. So do you think that they care that much? LeBron James signed a $1 billion deal with Nike. Do you think he cares about taking $15 million less on his contract if that was what he wanted to do?
No, I think that's a good point. And I think that ultimately...
Damn right it's a good point.
What I see, that's why I don't compliment her. I think ultimately what's going to end up happening, too, is it's not just... I don't think that the legislation's effectiveness is necessarily going to deter the player. I think where the NBA is going to go in the bargaining agreement is it's going to deter the owner.
The problem is, Dave, the only reason the Golden State thing happened is because they were the only one of all of the teams that were able to plan in advance for free agency hitting and have the space, have the ability to sign Kevin
Durant.
They
were one of two teams.
Yeah, everybody else.
The Oklahoma City Thunder were the other.
Yeah, but he was already on their
team. I understand that, but I'm saying that's the choice
but
right there.
But of everybody else other than Oklahoma City, who they had to plan for it because he was their player, all the other teams knew that this was happening, and nobody had the ability financially and in terms of room and their salary to do that.
And then once again,
I don't think you can't give credit to saying like, oh, teams are going to figure it out all of a sudden. They never have before.
Well, there were other teams that could have signed him. The Wizards, the Boston Celtics all courted him and had him in. And why, in fact, the Celtics at one point.
I'm talking about teams that already had a dynasty type situation. Well, you're talking about a team that had just, you know, won the NBA championship
before. But there's one team in the NBA that has a dynasty-type situation. That's the Warriors.
That's what I'm saying. Most dynasty teams...
They happen to plan for it.
Yes, and the fact they're mad at them for building a super team when they've already got all these great players, well, they were able to plan and make their money stretch and go where they needed so that could be a possibility.
There's no doubt that you can't blame the Warriors on this. What are you going to do? Turn down Kevin Durant? It's like blaming the athlete for having the fat contract. What are you going to do? Not signing.
Like, but you know what? I'm not taking that $156 million.
Exactly. And I don't blame them.
It's not fair.
But here's a great text.
It's not fun anymore.
Here's a great text from the 916. Players are commodities, and Can't restrict flow of commerce. Anti-free trade contradicts the concept of business. Well, sir or ma'am, you're under the impression that sports leagues run like real businesses, and they don't.
I can't figure out if that text is in favor of it or not.
I mean,
because isn't this kind of representative of the entire history of the NBA and collective bargaining? Some team or a player does something that the owners don't like, the other owners, and they can't control themselves from screwing up decisions like that. So they legislate protection for themselves and end up screwing over the players.
Of course. Of course. And you want to talk about restricting free trade in business. That's called the draft. That's called agency. That's called the bird rights. There's about 90 things in there.
Antitrust exemptions.
Exactly. So, sorry, that's the real world you're talking about, not the sports world. That is it. Back to the real world for us. Wednesday in the book, second half of the week tomorrow. Tons of stuff to talk to you about, including what happened with the Giants. I'm telling you, Giants going down tonight. I hate to say it. Feel bad.
Keep telling yourself, Dave.
No chance they win tonight.
And not a word.
And then
part of your process.
Another San Francisco tomorrow, the 49ers, in a short week. They have a ball game, too. Enjoy the rest of your broadcast day. For Kevin Sherr, it's Matt George, Nate Goodyear, Katie Christensen. I'm Carmichael Dave. See you at 6 a.m. right here on Sports 1140 KHTK.